Hi, this is Paloma.
And this is Rachel.
And this is Good Girls Don't.
And welcome back.
Yay.
I'm tired.
Me too. I know, I just said our best shows are when we're like tired or worn out or hungover, but...
And then I said, don't jinx it. But so, it's true. Well, maybe it's because we take it down a notch?
I don't know. Why are we tired? Well, lots of reasons. There's a big one.
Okay. We did yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. We went to a wedding.
We did.
It was awesome.
It
was kind of exactly what I needed in the world right now.
Yeah.
You know?
The groom, Jazz Brown, cried
during the entire ceremony, which was so...
therapeutic.
Yeah, like his tears were all of us.
Yeah.
But in a happy way.
Yeah.
The bride cried as well, but Jazz's... So Trina cried too, but Jazz's crying was like...
Yeah.
It was... a beautiful thing to behold.
It really, really was.
Yeah. I'm just needed a good, happy cry.
Yes.
Yeah.
It felt really good. And then at the reception afterwards, like the lunch afterwards, Jazz's dad, who I'm assuming hasn't like spoken that many times in front of people.
Exactly.
And probably not the kind of guy you wouldn't look to him to like give you, I don't know. He
gave this really short and sweet speech.
It was so powerful.
That was powerful. Talking about, like, you know, love through thousands of years, like the thing that brings two people together and you find your match or something to that effect.
Yeah, that we've been doing this for thousands of years, watching people who find their match and like and have a union. And it was just the most beautiful, thought-provoking little speech. It was like, he probably only said four sentences, right?
Right.
But they were the most amazing four sentences.
And at one point, Jazz like reached over and like patted his dad on the back, and it just...
I'm getting teary-eyed.
I know. Well, I think you and I both looked at each... I think you and me and Corey all looked at each other. We're just all...
I mean, it was, like, really sweet.
It was touching.
Because his dad just doesn't look like the kind of guy who talks a lot or, you know,
and I think he
offers
actually,
up advice.
I think he actually said something to that effect.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not the kind of guy who gets up here. And, yeah, anyway, it was... And then Jazz made a comment during the reception about just people being good to each other. And, you know, sometimes you just need to take a little... break from life's everything and celebrate love. So it was lovely.
You didn't
Plus
go
there were tacos.
To the late, late reception.
I didn't go to the late, late show.
But I did.
So I heard.
What you shouldn't do in life is drink a lot at 1 p.m. and then go home for a little bit and then go back out and drink more. This is my life advice.
This is in your how to live life book.
Yes. These were poor choices I made. And I danced too much and my neck hurts today.
Oh.
And this has happened to me before when I've danced too much. And somebody once told me because it happened to me when I was younger, like in seventh grade.
Uh-huh.
I said my neck hurt. And it was this older woman. And she said, well, you don't dance with your neck. You dance with your butt.
You were doing a lot of head shaking.
I don't know what I was doing.
Okay, so I just did a little head shake to sort of illustrate what you did. And it hurt. Ow.
Okay, so I need to do a little more rump shaking then, right?
Yeah. Move that party down a bit.
Yeah. My bad. But it was such a nice wedding.
It was a wonderful
you
wedding.
You had to go home, though.
I had to go home and work. Boo. Boo me.
You graded papers.
I did. Yeah, that's... I'm a nerd.
See, what you should have done is just given everyone an A. Best teacher ever.
Don't think I didn't think about it.
Easy. Oh, I know. Like, we'll talk later.
Yeah. Believe me, that thought crossed my mind more than once.
So we took a lot. We didn't drive. We took cars. We took Uber, I'll be honest with you.
We had
four Uber drivers. Two trips there and two trips back from, to and from Sacramento.
And how was your experience?
Well, so, you know, usually we had one that was like, she was this younger girl, and she was like, she was a lesbian, and she was telling us about her wife, and it was, we liked talking to her. She was super friendly and nice. And then the second guy we got, though, was amazing. It was this guy named Fred. And
Fred?
Yeah, Fred wants to play guitar, so
hey,
he
Fred.
And Bobby had a ton to talk about. And and when he told us that he met Eddie Money on a plane one time.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really funny. Anyway, And so then we had an ex-Woodland police officer who was one of ours, and that was probably the most uncomfortable car ride.
Was this on the second trip back to Sacramento?
This was on the way to Starlight Lounge. Okay. And we had to struggle to make conversation, and I think he was scared to tell us he was a police officer, and I don't know, the whole thing
Did he try to make conversation or engage in conversation with you? I always find it weird when you, like, I always try to chat up the driver a little bit, you know, and then at the same time, I'm like, well, maybe they're just kind of tired of conversation.
Yeah.
But there's sometimes you just get a weird tension where you talk and they give you like a monosyllabic answer, and then it's just like this kind of weird tension in the car. So,
but isn't that part of their job to like entertain you?
Do a dance. I don't know.
So then we go to the Starlight Lounge, and Bobby and I both drink too much because we don't get to go out together very often with a driver. Usually he has to drive, and then it's like I'm the drunk wife and he's grumpy and whatever. You know.
Never been there.
So the car ride home, right when we were leaving, I have this like emotional moment where we're just like,
aww,
this late drunken night, you just got married, and our friend Charles and Christine, they just had a baby. And so it's just this like a special little moment. Yeah. So the driver pulls up and we get in the car, and his name is Omar, and I can tell he's from the Middle East. I just don't know where.
Yeah.
And so I asked him where he lived. He said Sacramento. And so finally it came up that he was from Iran. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, drunk Paloma, just rein it in.
I like that you at least had that conversation.
Well, it doesn't matter, because then it all came out. And I was like, I hope your family doesn't think we're bad people. And just and he had a lot to say. It was like this really thoughtful conversation.
Okay.
And he's sad to see where the U.S. is right now.
Oh God, it was you and me both.
I know. When it was really sad, because he's like, I moved here because it's not safe there. I moved my family here to keep them
safe.
And because
this is supposed to be a country of opportunity for everybody, you know, and now it's only seems to be a country of opportunity for really rich white guys.
Yeah.
And their wives.
Well, and then the most depressing thing he told me is that he has a business degree in Iran, but he can't use it here.
Yeah.
And so basically he drives cars.
And that's
all day.
Pretty common that people in all, like across all spectrums of the professional world, come to the U.S. with these degrees, but they're not usable for various reasons. And so they have to go and like kind of redo their education or, you know,
yeah, but then how do they have money to do that? Because it's expensive.
Yeah, I know.
School.
Or I was going to say, or they end up, you know,
driving
working
cars
in these jobs that they're way overqualified to do. But it's a matter of survival. But they're also, it's the idea, well, at least I'm in a country where, you know, I have rights and I'm safe. And
for now.
And now all of that's being taken away. You know, our country's promise is being broken, you know, in just the, how many days since the inauguration?
13? Let me rephrase that. Not that many.
No. Too many. No, how about too many?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it feels like a lifetime, which I think was what we said last week when we did this. It was like it already felt like a lifetime, and now it feels like another lifetime. And
I know.
Yeah, it's been really interesting is not the right word here to describe how it's been since January 20th. It's been horrifying on so many levels. And the only silver lining to it all is, which I think we talked about last week, was just the spirit of activism and protests that we've seen. That's like the only thing that kind of keeps me going right now.
You know, I should have talked to you about this before we started recording, because you and I haven't addressed this before. But, you know, because I'm a big fan of protest and activism. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when the violence breaks out, I don't like that. And there seems to be like this talk of the people in black who are destroying things. And I wonder who these people are and where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. Who are those people?
Well, I think that they're so I'm right there with you. It's like I love the spirit of protest. I had never protested before the Women's March, you know, in a setting like that. I'd always sort of admired people who had done it, but part of me was like, oh, what difference does it really make? And after the protest, you know, and with all the protests that I've seen since the election, my thoughts on that have shifted as long as the protests are coupled with actual action. But I do, you know, I feel the same way. It's like when factions of the protests turn violent or destructive, I think that, you know, that's obviously counterintuitive to everything. And B, who is coming to those looking to destroy things in a setting where the rest of us or the rest of the people are looking to just make a statement, a verbal statement, you know, a symbolic statement. And, you know, I think that there are groups of people who they thrive on that sort of chaos, and they thrive on destroying something, even in the name of, you know, what I mean. I don't even know. Sometimes I'm like, when somebody, like the protest at Berkeley after the Milo Yiannopoulos, after that was canceled, it's like, okay, yeah, I'm really glad that people protested his appearance there. But when you start setting things on fire, you become a part of the problem. You become the thing you become an asshole part of society. Yeah. And so you're not, you know, there's no place for that. I have no use for it. You know, until you're physically threatened,
exactly.
There's no, you know, or physically hurt in some way, you have no reason to respond in that way.
I totally agree.
Yeah. So I think we're on the same page there.
Okay. Well, anyway, but
for assholes.
So wait. But here's, okay. Conspiracy Paloma wants to make an appearance here.
Hi, Conspiracy Paloma. How are you?
Well, I'm great. Okay. Maybe. Okay. I don't know yet.
Yes. You tell me.
Yeah. Well, you're the one who's been checking up on me. So Conspiracy Paloma thinks possibly that those are paid people. Because, and here's my thought, because similar group of people were at the inauguration.
Yeah.
And then also at this Berkeley one, having to do with with Milo. And I think that guy's, I think he's a world-class asshole.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. But there's the groups of people known as Antifa, like the anti-fascists, which is a faction that has existed prior to Trump's appearance on the global stage. So I've always just sort of assumed that the violent protesters were parts of that group. But you know what? If the right is going to try to spread the rumor that all those protests were made up of paid protesters bust in, then I'm all for spreading the rumor that the violent protesters who show up at these anti-Trump events are paid protesters on the part of the right. So I'm fine with that conspiracy. Okay. If we're going to spread some fake news, let's spread some good fake news.
Thank you. Okay, yeah. So Conspiracy Rachel is on board too, then.
Absolutely.
Okay, sweet. That is what I should have cleared with you before we went on air, because I wanted to make sure that Conspiracy Paloma wasn't too off.
No, Conspiracy Paloma has a friend in Conspiracy Rachel.
Okay. Okay, now we'll switch back to normal
conspiracy
humans.
Twinsies.
So normal people. Oh, not a conspiracy. So what's ironic about my driver last night is that we're having these terrible issues with Iran, and like I am scared, and I've talked to Bobby about this. I'm like, war with Iran is really scary to me, and I said, and war with China is even scarier to me. Mm-hmm. But Bobby, I am just gonna tell you how much I love my husband. He is so even tempered when it comes to politics, or not even tempered, like he just is able to absorb information and come to a sound conclusion.
Uh-huh.
He's not flippant or irrational, or he really takes in all the information and thinks it through. Sorry, I really love my husband, I guess. But so I talked about war with China, and he said, you know what, China's not stupid. He's like, they know this is fleeting. They're just gonna play along for 4 years and see what happens. And it made me feel so much better, because I hope he's right.
I very much hope that he's right. I very much hope it doesn't take 4 years. That they have to play along.
I know.
And the thing is, I think that he is right. I feel like Donald Trump is going to do whatever he can to just to push as many buttons as he can. And I just pray that there's not a bizarro Donald Trump who is going to respond to it, essentially, and take the bait.
I just don't want him to press the wrong button, if you know what I mean.
Right. Exactly. Oh my God.
And then the whole thing with Australia, that actually cracks me up. That's like the funniest, horrible thing that's happened.
A fight with Australia.
It's so funny.
Come on.
And it's not funny. It's really terrible, but it's so funny.
It'd be hilarious if it wasn't real political life. And can you even imagine the Australian Prime Minister on the other end of the phone? Can you imagine his face, like, during this phone conversation? His sort of like, what is happening here?
I know you do this too.
Like,
you
had to put it on speakerphone everybody needs to hear this.
So it must be what I do. Like, sometimes if there's a crazy conversation going on, I'll look at Bobby and I'll be like, oh my God. And like, you know, make crazy finger around my ear. Like, oh.
You can totally see the Australian Prime Minister. I can just see him like putting it on speakerphone and like motioning for everybody to come in.
Trying to cover his mouth and not laugh.
Right. Putting it on mute and just being like, this motherfucker.
But this is so not funny. Oh. It's not funny. It's the most funny, not funny thing I've ever dealt with.
Yeah. It's hilariously awful. Awfully hilarious.
How do your students feel about the world right now?
So it's interesting, because I was having this conversation with somebody the other day. I was like, you know, I'm trying part of me is trying to not be too partisan in my classes because, you know, it's a learning environment and I don't want to push my politics on people. However, part of my job is also to explain, you know, that there is no such thing as, you know, the concept of alternative facts, you know, and, yes. and so explaining to them propaganda, media propaganda, and to be fair, explaining that media propaganda exists on both sides of the political spectrum, that there are sites on the left that are nothing but propaganda or that they, you know, incorrectly frame stories or, you know, and make shit up. And then, make shit up.
We're and using such nice words.
Yes. And then, that you know, obviously there are ones on the right who do the same. So we've had a lot of conversations about what is fake news and what, you know, what is, you know, propaganda and what the role of the government should be with the press, like talking about a free press, which is what we theoretically have in the United States versus state run media, you know, that exists in like North Korea or China. And so we've had some really interesting conversations, and I've sort of had this not fear, but maybe an anxiety, like at some point, a student, I'm going to get some like Trump kid in there who's going to
like my little brother.
Yeah. who's going to want to like challenge me with something that he read on Breitbart that I'm going to have to expend the energy not to disprove him, but to be professional about it in a classroom setting, like not lose my shit in the classroom and just be like, are you kidding me? I know that you're smarter than that.
Well, that's what drives me crazy about my brother. Yeah. I know he's smarter than that. Yeah. I just don't understand how he got sucked into this.
I think he's faking it.
I don't anymore. I used to think he was just trying to make everyone in our family upset. I don't think he is.
So
anymore.
Anyway, I just keep waiting for that kid to show up in my class and, you know, kind of try to put me on the spot, and which is like, fine, you know, go ahead and try and put me on the spot because I can talk to you about fake news all day.
Rachel, don't take no mess.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but I will say there is no lack of enthusiasm on the topic. The students are really, really interested. We've spent a lot of time about how do you vet credible news sources? Where do you get, you know, news that is as nonpartisan as possible, you know, while understanding that the people who run newspapers are human beings and everybody has an agenda, but how do you find the source that is doing the best job that it can to be nonpartisan? And they're all really, I think after this election cycle, they're all really vested in trying to find credible news sources and to develop media literacy. So to me, it's kind of exciting to be like, I'm really sad that I'm not in the newsroom every day anymore, but on the same token, I'm also very excited to be in the setting where, you know, I get to have these conversations with students every day.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. And it gives me hope that, you know, that they have an interest in being media literate and not being taken in by crap.
Yes. Yeah. Taken in by crap.
Taken in by crap. I need to put that on the syllabus. Yes. This class is about not being taken in by crap. So,
okay. So Rachel and I, we discuss show ideas.
Uh-huh. We do.
We each come up with what we want to contribute or what we want to talk about.
We actually plan, kind of.
But I had a really hard time spelling anecdote, and I just...
Well, I couldn't say it, remember, earlier today? Well, I was like, I have this anecdote. And I think it's just because I'm tired, but I'm like, you know, I have that thing that I want to tell you.
So wait, I'm going to do a contest right now. What? Okay. How did you spell it?
A-N-E-C... If I can't read my writing. Hold on. You're making me spell on the...
Yes.
A-N-E-C-T-O-T-E. I know how to spell. I went to college.
Wait, you spelled anecdote.
No, A-N-E-C-D-O-T-E.
Okay, anecdote. Okay, we spelled it the same way.
Yeah.
Okay. I wonder if that's right. We don't have
I think it's right.
Okay.
My notepad doesn't have spell check, but...
It's right enough. How about that?
For the life of me, I couldn't say the word earlier today. Okay. But I wanted... I wanted to give you an anecdote
about
my students.
Anecdote me.
Yeah. So I was... Here I am going on and on about how wonderful my students are. And, you know, I think for the most part they are. I'm sure there's... Yeah, I'm sure there's some assholes in there. But I really like, you know, the majority of my students, and they're interested, but... You know, it's community college, or it's college in general. So, of course, you're going to get these differing levels of interest and investment in it. Yes. So, we just finished the third week of school. And on Thursday, I was going through my rosters, and I realized, like, in one class, I had a... if somebody doesn't show up the first day and then they don't show up the second day, you just drop them. Uh-huh. It's like they never attended the class. But then somebody, like, shows up on the first day and then they miss, you know, it's like you're kind of, whatever, trying to... give them the benefit of the doubt. So in my syllabus, it says I can drop you after 3 classes. That's my policy. The school policy is like I have to drop them if they miss 8 classes.
Okay.
But in my, you know, for me, it's like if you have 3 unexcused absences, you haven't been in touch with me 3 times, I'll drop you. So I,
you would have dropped me in every class.
Oh, then. I would have dropped me. Yeah. I would have dropped my, I still have anxiety dreams about, I'm sure we all have, you know, where you're in college and it's the day of the final and then you haven't gone all semester and then you have to figure out what to do. So, you know, I still have that. But so anyway, I had this, I was looking at my roster. I'm like, oh, I just realized this student hasn't been here for 5 class sessions. And so I'm like, I'm going to just drop her. So during one of my office hours, I go online and I dropped her and I dropped this other student who had missed 3 classes in a row. Mm-hmm. And I had not heard from either of them, like either of them. So I'm not kidding you. Within a half an hour of me dropping the student who missed 5 classes in a row, I get a phone call on my office phone. And I don't think the student realized that I had dropped her, but she calls and she's like, yeah, I just wanted to, you know, I haven't been in your class the last 5 times. And, you know, I was trying to decide whether or not I wanted to take your class. And I think now I want to take it. So I want to come by and talk about what I missed. And I'm like, maybe you could have tried to decide by actually showing.
So it was just a coincidence that she called.
Yeah, it was a coincidence. And, she's like, I was trying to decide whether or not I wanted to take it. What, by not showing up?
Well, you made some decisions for her.
Yeah, I made the
decision. Did you let her back in?
No.
Okay.
And so then, so I had dropped the other guy and he emailed me and he's like, oh, I missed the last 3 classes because I wanted to see if I could take the class instead at Sac State, and that's not going to work out for me, so I'm going to come by and get all the information, you know, all the homework that I missed. I emailed him back because he had emailed me and I said, you missed 3 classes, you know, and you're way behind at this point. He's like, he tried to argue with me via email. He's like, I don't think I missed 3 classes.
Oh,
you know, and I can catch up really fast. I'm like, no, you don't understand here. I'm not actually giving you the option. I actually have it written down. I took roll. So, you know, there's always, you come to the realization that there's always going to be students who were like me.
Yeah.
When I was in my first year of college. It's a wonder I ever made it past my first semester.
Yeah.
So
I didn't go to class. I didn't like to go to class very often.
Yeah. I started liking to go to class more, you know, at a certain point. But, you know, you start to take a little liberty with it and you kind of know. But I'm like, it's the first couple of weeks and you're trying to tell me.
No, you wait until the end of the semester.
When you try to tell me that you missed 5 classes in a row because you were trying to decide whether or not you wanted to take my class. That's not how you gather information on whether you want to take the class.
That was poor strategy on her part.
Yeah, poor strategy on her part. Sorry, lady.
Well, that's a good anecdote.
Yeah,
thank you.
That was interesting, but
interesting and funny, just like an anecdote.
And that's your lesson on anecdotes today.
Oh, guess what we get to do when we're done podcasting?
Eat food and drink.
Yes, because guess what? It's Super Bowl Sunday.
It's Super Bowl Sunday. And guess how much we care about the Super Bowl?
I hate football so much.
And I'm just absolutely indifferent to
it. You and I are basketball people.
We are. I love basketball so much. Football, I don't know. It's just,
I can't watch it.
Corey always tries to explain things to me about football.
Oh, that's the worst.
He's trying to be helpful, but I'm like, it just looks dumb.
Well, see, that's the thing. Bobby tries to explain it to me. She's, well, see, and this is why this is important.
Yeah.
I'm like,
and then if you do this.
I care so little.
But it's like, I don't know. To me, it's such a stop and start sport, whereas basketball is so fast-paced
and fun and
very
exciting.
Basketball is very athletic and there's almost like this beautiful choreography to
there
it.
Is.
Like, you know, it's like,
oh my God, Rachel, you're speaking my heart right now.
It's like, that's why it made me fall in love with basketball. It's like the athleticism but also the elegance of, like, when you see good plays happening, it's magical.
Also, it's really funny too. All the, like, the player, there's always all these funny little interactions that you get to catch because there is so much interaction.
And because they're not, also because, you know, in football, they're wearing this entire, like, regalia of uniforms where you can't even see their faces. And basketball, you get a lot, it's a lot more intimate.
Well,
because
baseball, they're all far apart from each other. There's not that much interaction. But in basketball, they're, like, on top of each other, like, knocking each other over and all.
And
it's
if you're, a lot of times, if you're watching the game, like on TV, you can hear some of the conversations that they have,
and you hear bad words.
You hear the bad words.
So funny.
I love basketball. So
me
football,
too.
I'm like,
and DeMarcus Cousins, as much as he annoys me, he's really funny.
He is funny.
He cracks me up.
Yeah.
And I like, I like him more now. He's
a little bit of a big baby, but I still like him. Yeah. I actually like the new coach too.
I do too. Yeah. I'm happy with the Kings.
Yeah. So, I mean, basketball. So really, I think you and I are kind of just here for the food and yes. Lady Gaga.
And to record. And oh, and I am excited about the halftime show.
Yeah, I'm excited about the halftime show. And of course, who doesn't love some good, bad commercials during
Thank
the Super
you.
Bowl?
We so. Need to talk about Lady Gaga, because I don't think you and I have ever talked about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Why don't you
So, okay. You, being the good friend you are, you used to get tickets when you worked for
The Bee.
The Bee, yeah. And you'd have to go review shows, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you got tickets to New Kids on the Block. And so, of course, you call me.
Yeah, like, want to go?
And so we went, and it was really funny because they're like, okay, next up is Lady Gaga. You're going to see a lot more from her.
Yeah, she was the opening act. And we were all, huh?
And she came out, and she was kind of, like, ridiculous. And,
yeah.
And, like, wearing an ill-fitting outfit with maybe not the best body. Like, it just, and not the, I mean, yeah. Sorry. Like, that was really terrible of me to say that.
We're not body-shaming her.
I was going to not wear any clothing, I would... I don't know. Anyway, I was totally body shaming. That was really awful. But
okay. So take that back. Let me correct our correction. We were body shaming.
We were. And did, but at the, we were okay.
Yeah.
We've seen the error in our ways.
Yes. Well, here's the thing. It's like when we saw the show, I don't think either of us were terribly impressed. I mean,
no.
But I am actually something of a Lady Gaga fan now.
Me too. I
actually
like her.
Love her music. I love that she writes her own songs, that she plays the piano, that she really does have a good voice.
She's and a huge Iron Maiden fan.
There you go. And I'm kind of sad that my introduction to her was opening for New Kids on the Block when I was probably just in a frame of mind where I'm like, oh, opening act, yeah, you know?
And to be fair to us, I think we were probably more body shaming because we were, like, bored.
Probably.
So it was just there for us.
Yeah.
We didn't have a lot else going on.
Yeah.
I don't think we would have body shamed her head.
We were in a mean girls kind of mood. And you know what? I will say, as a feminist, I'm not a perfect feminist. I'm a shitty feminist half the time.
I am too.
You know? And I know that. I know that about myself.
To be fair, I judge my body more than any other woman's. Does that make
it
better?
Girl, you don't even know. I have to feminist talk myself all the time. Like seriously, I'm like, why am I such a bitch to myself?
So my cousin and I, we were talking about like Botox and ice or cold sculpting for fat and stuff. And then after Donald Trump got elected, she and I, the next time we got together, it's like, we're not watching reality television anymore. We're not dieting anymore. I'm like, those days are over. Like, it's for real feminism now.
Yeah.
Then a couple weeks later, it's like you start your period. You're like, oh, fat and gross.
Yeah.
But
you know what? It's a little more tempered now.
Yes, it's for
Donald
sure
Donald Trump
tempered.
Is definitely... injected some levity into my self-loathing. Like,
yeah.
He's definitely helped me balance out my self-loathing with rage against him.
Yes.
So thank you.
I would rather be smart, caring, and thoughtful than have a very attractive
yeah.
body to him, to
yeah.
his type of man.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think I'm also... I can't speak for you because, you know, I'm older than you, but I'm also at an age where I give fewer and fewer fucks about, you know... I mean... I care,
yes,
but I also am just like, you know, this is what it is. What
yeah.
you see is what,
well,
like,
is,
even if I lost 5 pounds, I'm never going to be a supermodel.
Exactly.
And that 5 pounds, the thing is knowing that I'll lose that 5 pounds and I'll still want to lose another.
That's exactly
so
it. Well, and also,
it's futile.
After I had Rosalie, I'm like, I'm a mom now. Like, so, who am I trying to?
Well, you pushed out a baby. That's
like
superhuman. You said
fat, okay?
Superhuman strength. I have nothing to fall back on in that respect.
I think it was Ryan Reynolds. Like, I never even knew or cared about him. But there are all these quotes about him talking about his wife having a baby, and he's like, "Yeah, you know, I get up in the middle of the night and change all the diapers because, you know, she created a human."
Fair enough. Yeah. And I don't even have that to fall back on. I just, you know, I'm just like the point where I'm just like, I'm old and I'm tired of this shit.
We're fine.
Yeah.
So anyway, really sorry
yeah.
that we body shamed
yeah,
Lady,
that was,
Lady
that was,
Gaga.
That was like 8 or 9 years ago, Rachel
yes.
and Paloma, and we have
yeah.
definitely
We've body shamed less
up.
And less.
Yeah.
Every year it's less and less.
Yes. We are, our shitty feminism is getting better.
Yes. Our brand of feminism is called working on it.
Yeah.
We're trying
I
to be
can appreciate
the best
that. It's
people.
Is that the fourth wave of feminism or fifth wave?
I don't think it has a wave yet.
It's the no wave feminism.
It's called just give us a chance, okay?
We're trying.
We do other things.
Yeah.
I'm building a strong woman in my daughter. She plays this game called Strong Girl. She puts on these wristbands. There's a punk band, Sick of It All.
Uh-huh.
She puts on the wristbands. Bobby got them on whatever tour he was on or something. She puts them on and she'll lift things above her head. And she'll go, I'm strong,
oh, that's
girl.
Awesome.
And so we all have to pretend like we can't lift what she's lifting.
Aw. I love it because, like, Rosalie and you know, my nieces, you know, Audrey and Scout. And Rosalie's my niece, too, even though, you know.
Oh, yes.
I have such faith in the next future of, yeah, you know, young women who are going to be kick-ass and,
yes,
and who are going to get, whoa, they're going to, their shitty feminist phase is not going to be as long as our shitty feminist phase.
Absolutely.
So more power to them.
So I am doing my best. Okay, guys.
We are both doing our best. Yes,
we try.
Yeah.
Rachel, are we done? This is a short show, I think.
That's okay, because our last one was really long. You know,
Leo. Better to have a short show than a shit show.
There you go.
That's my motto.
That's our motto.
Should be everyone's
motto.
Can
we make it? Move that on our logo.
Trademark. Oh, should we talk about our little group we're forming?
We could. It's in baby steps.
It is
a baby that is in the baby yeah, stage.
We're working on a little activism group.
Yeah, it's literally a little activism group. It's called the Tiny Resistance.
The Tiny Resistance. Doing our small little parts to make
a tiny difference. Do a tiny act of resistance every day to make a change. And so,
yeah,
this came out of a text exchange that we had between you and me and Aaron and your cousin Ian.
Yeah. And so it's kind of grown from there. And what's interesting is my sister also texted me and was like,
right,
in another text group.
Right.
And so,
yeah,
I'm like, wow, they kind of were coming up with their own tiny resistance,
yeah,
too.
So
like, it's just, it's interesting.
I think we haven't entirely figured out what we're going to do with the tiny resistance other than resist and things and baby steps. But
it happened so fast, I haven't even been able to talk to my sister about it yet. Yeah. So sorry, Renee, this is news to you.
But Renee, whether you know it or not, you were also part of the tiny resistance.
Like, we're working on it. Okay. And but, we're probably going to have t-shirts with proceeds that go to something.
Yeah,
good,
we're gonna have merch, because we are all about merch.
Merch people.
Yeah, and we're going to have proceeds that go to various organizations. We already have a website, actually.
Yes, I know. Thank you, Jason Newquist.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jason.
He just like whipped that up out of thin air.
This whole thing happened on last Sunday afternoon, right? Like,
yeah,
it literally, like within the span of a couple of hours, we had a name, a website, and the next night we had some logo ideas that you drew and.
Still working on, sorry.
Well, but it was beautiful. So this is still in the baby stages,
yeah,
of formation, but hopefully we'll have more to tell you next time, or
yeah,
stay tuned and we'll have things for you to buy, because, you know, we like that kind of thing. We like we cute t-shirts. And we're going to make people buy cute t-shirts, and the money will go to good causes. And we are also going to come up with like tiny action plans of ways to fight the goddamn fucking,
I know,
shit show circus.
Yes,
the circus shit show,
the goddamn,
as I call
fucking
it,
circus shit show. Yeah,
sorry about my language, you guys.
Yeah.
On that note,
yeah, well, anyway, so and I hope everyone else can find their little tiny form of activism as,
yeah,
well, and try to make the world a better place.
I feel like that's what this world is, the good world is turning into, and it's
I
a beautiful
too.
thing.
I do too.
We little tiny acts of revolution and resistance turn into a giant act,
yeah,
of revolution and resistance.
Like,
so,
I kind of feel like we even came clean with our Lady Gaga body shaming. Like,
we did. I think that was one of our daily acts of, that was one of our daily actions, to admit our shittiness.
Yeah, exactly.
Talk about how we've grown and how we're growing.
Exactly. Yes. So. But I'm just growing physically.
Same.
Okay.
All right. Well, this was fun.
That was, yeah, yes. This was fun.
This was fun.
Thank you, Rachel.
Yeah. All right. Well, so are we done here?
Yeah.
Are we done?
I think that's it, right?
All right. Well,
all right.
Okay. For this week, Good Girls Don't was...
did we ever figure it out?
Probably not. So I'm just going to wing it.
Okay.
It was produced by Paloma Jordan and Rachel LeBrock. It was engineered by Bobby Jordan and Paloma Jordan.
Yes.
Childcare painting services provided, ooh, by Corey Vick.
Yes.
He's down there painting with Rosalie right now. Food and catering provided by Paloma Jordan and probably Dan and Aaron when
they
came over.
And you,
we brought some cheese and crackers and chips and salsa.
We all chipped in.
And
chipped in.
So on that note, thanks so much, you guys. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.